What's up, sandwich heads? Today on Steve-O's Sandwich Reviews, we've got the tips and tricks to the best sandwich order. And it all starts with this little guy right here. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Partial to pastrami, craving a Cubano. Yeah, sounds delicious, but boom! Add the crisp, refreshing taste of Pepsi Zero Sugar and cue the fireworks. Lunch, dinner, or late night, it'll be a sandwich worth celebrating. Trust me, your boy's eaten a lot of sandwiches in his day, and the one thing I can say with absolute fact, every bite is better with Pepsi.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Ian Gibbs.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun is set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. It's Wednesday, April 19th. This is Episode 7. And we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about but can never quite reach. How you doing, Ian?
No, I've been better, but I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you are sick.
Yes, I am. Awesome.
I'm sitting across from Ian. He's wheezing like an old steam engine. And he's sitting next to an enormous bottle of NyQuil, which he's sipping from at intervals. He kind of looks like a white Lil Wayne.
I'm chasing the cherry dragon.
I'm waiting for him to drop the hottest album of 2017.
It'll happen.
So like I said, we're recording a day late.
Mm-hmm.
Because you caught plague on weekend and have been slowly dying.
I did. And you had an interesting weekend, did you not?
Well, yeah, I did. I had some company in town from Revelstoke.
Nice.
A good friend of mine was visiting. It was great to see her, but I got to say, I felt bad because she's very, very fit. And I'm a human potato.
Yes, am I. I understand that.
You know, she likes to go for 3-hour long bike rides. And I mean, I'd sleep until 11, then I go to the coffee shop for 3 hours. That's my day.
I like her 3-hour bike ride. Like she stopped for breakfast or got lost.
No, apparently the actual physical activity lasts 3 hours long. I didn't think there were bicycle trails in the world that were that long.
I didn't think bikes actually worked that long.
I suspect there's a human rights issue at play.
I'll go on a bike ride. Don't get me wrong. I own a very nice bike, and I'll go on a bike ride, but there better be a pub or a bakery at the end of it.
Yeah, no.
I'm not going.
100%.
Yeah.
So before we get started, we have a little bit of feedback from the last episode.
Okay.
So it has been suggested that I came across as a bit intense in my enthusiasm for Barb from Stranger Things.
Intense meaning creepy?
That word was also used. Let me be clear. I never want to be creepy. I mean, I respect Barb from Stranger Things as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to respect her on a bearskin rug.
Please stop.
In front of a roaring fire.
Oh, God.
For 3 hours.
That's a hideous visual.
So moving on from that as fast as possible.
Please do.
And before authorities can be called. Today we're going to be talking about Ian's book, Victoria's Most Haunted, which is finally almost available in stores.
It is on the 25th, so next Tuesday.
That's fantastic. So yeah, this will be out on Thursday, so the following Tuesday, pick it up. It'll be on Amazon. We'll be in stores right away?
It will be in stores on the 25th, yeah. It'll be in all the local bookstores in Victoria, and otherwise it's available online.
Ooh, that's fantastic. And you've got some signings coming up, which we'll be talking about a little bit later. We'll give the dates.
Yeah, that's great.
And I'm really excited for the signings, mostly because I think it's going to be a battle for survival as your publicist, who deeply hates me, hunts me to the ends of the earth like the Predator did Arnold. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, when we first started the show, I would always bleep the title of Ian's book. His publicist was not very pleased about this.
It started out she would mention it and say, Ian Gibbs and Brennan Storr and their podcast.
Yeah, when they did the social media posts, they would say, the new podcast from our author Ian Gibbs and co-host Brennan Storr. And after about 3 episodes of me bleeping the title of his book, it became Ian's podcast.
Pretty much.
And so I sort of expected the signing. I'll be standing there and all of a sudden I hear that Predator breathing noise. And then I'm going to see those three lights appear on my chest.
You know what? No. Tori is very nice.
No, and she's going to vaporize my torso.
She's really. I don't think she has the capability to vaporize.
What's Jesus. She's here. She found us, Ian. We're going to get to the chopper.
Yeah, you run.
And we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. I managed to survive the break without having my melon exploded by the tiny lady who is trying to sell Ian's book.
Praise the Lord.
Pass the ammunition.
There you go.
So like I said, Ian's new book is out, and he's going to be telling us all about it. And I want to start by saying I most certainly have read this book and will definitely be using my deep knowledge of it.
Finally, you mean you've read the book.
In fairness, it took a while. Ian, I met Ian in December, and he gave me a copy of his book about 2 weeks after that, and I read it on Sunday.
And juxtapose that with me, who met Brennan the next day. I texted him and said, where should I buy your book? I went and bought the book, and I read it the same day. But you know, that's just me.
Joke's on him. I didn't pay for the copy he gave me.
That's a good point.
And you so, point Bren. 1-0. So I'm going to, I'd love to just hear about the genesis of the book.
Sure.
Tell everyone a little bit about how it is you came to write it.
I came to write it, and this story is embarrassing when authors come to me and say, please tell me, how do I get published? And I say, I don't know. They asked me to
write
it.
Does this happen a lot? Jesus, you sound like the Lord on the Mount when they come to me for advice.
They have. I've had four people.
That's insane.
I know. And they're like, how did you get published? And I'm like,
I have spoken to an audience of millions, literally of millions, promoting my book.
Yeah.
You are the only person who contacted me.
Really?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I don't know how to feel about that. At first I thought, oh, it's normal. Who gives a shit?
No.
And now, no, apparently you got guys beating down your door.
And actually I contacted you because Karina, she knows your wife.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't even heard you.
No one gives a hairy tit about the strange little place.
I thought it was a good book, but
available
we're here to
in
talk,
stores near you.
We're here to talk about mine, you selfish bastard.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. No. So let's say you're going to tell the story. Sorry, sure. I interrupted you.
Absolutely. So I was doing ghost walks. I do those here in Victoria. You should come. They're fun. 7:30 and 9:30 in the summertime. And we do basically a 90-minute guided walk around the city telling ghost stories. And I was doing those at Halloween, where we do four a night. It's a very busy time. And a lady hung back and was asking some questions, which people do, which is fine. And she was asking very specific questions about certain stories, and I answered them as best I could. And then she said, do you write the way you speak? And I have done a bit of writing before, not a lot, but I have been told that I do actually sound, when people read my writing, they can hear my voice.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
And I said, yeah, actually, that's a weird thing to say, but yes, I actually do. And she said, because I want a book about the ghosts of Victoria, and I'm just wondering if you would write it. And I was like, sure. So I cleared that with my boss, who is actually the man who compiles and puts together all the ghost stories, and John Adams is sort of the ghost story guy in town.
And he wrote the foreword for you.
He wrote the foreword for me, which was really nice. But I
didn't ask
him,
me, but that's fine. No, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Well, I needed someone who people knew. So
just so that I'm going to eat this jelly bean while you're talking.
That's shut up? So I ended up actually talking to John and saying, look, I've been asked to do this. Do you mind if I do this? Because I would really like to, but if you feel like I'm stepping on your toes, then I won't do it. And he was incredibly gracious, incredibly generous. He said, no, he said, it's great. He said, first of all, thank you for asking for permission, because he'd had several people rip off his stories over the years. And
ouch.
And the second thing he said was, how is it a bad thing for me if one of my guides is a published ghost story author? And I thought, oh, yeah, I never really flipped that one around. So he was nothing but supportive, nothing but helpful. And he has a book of his own, Ghost Sebastian Square, which is great, too. And so I didn't really do any of the Ghost Sebastian Square because he had that covered. But other than that, it's a book full of ghost stories that I've learned. And also there's a few of my own experiences in there as well.
Right. So, I mean, let's talk about some of these stories, because I'm really curious to hear you actually talk about them. The first one I was curious about, there was that one about the cemetery where people bury their pets and then they come back to life. I mean, that seems almost too supernatural to be real. Can you?
Yeah, that's Pet Sematary by Stephen King, you idiot.
Well,
you have not read my book.
I have.
You've read a book.
I have read several books. Firestarter, that's you, right?
I'm going to assume you mean the story about the Fire Indian people, the First Nations people in my book, not the novel of a little girl who can start fire with her mind. Also by Mr. Stephen King.
Let's go with yes.
So the story that it's actually one of my favorite ones. It's about a place here in Victoria. Used to be called Dead Man's Point. They changed the name because obviously no one would want to stay in a hotel called Dead Man's Point Inn.
I would.
Yeah, you probably would. It was a point of land that came out across the Inner Harbor from the city of Victoria. And at the time it was covered in trees. A man saw the land and decided that would be a great place for a factory. His name was Jacob Sell, and he purchased the land. And the first thing he did was he hired a group of people to come in and clear the land off of the trees. Well, when they started to do this, they noticed that there were baskets and boxes of bones tumbling out of the trees. And not knowing what they were, they said to Jacob, "What do we do?" And he said, "Oh, just push them all into a pile. We'll burn them." The First Nations people, of course, knew exactly what was going on. This was one of their sacred groves of trees where they would bury their dead. They called it sky burial. And they would let the body become bones, and then they would load the bones into boxes and baskets and put them high up into the trees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this was where they would go to commune with their dead. They didn't believe that the dead left. They believed they stayed with their bones. And so you needed to create places for the dead to be able to hang out in. And then you could go and talk to them and commune with them. So Jacob, being a hardened businessman, was like, yeah, burn them. So they piled them all up. They set them on fire. And what didn't get set on fire, they pushed out into the waters. The chief of the village across the way in the Songhees area saw this and sent a runner all the way around the harbor to find out, like, who are these crazy people bringing a curse on themselves? And the runner got there, saw what was happening, figured out what was going on, ran back to the chief and said, you know what? They have no idea what they're doing. And the chief ended up moving, like, the women and children further away from the area because he didn't know what was going to happen, but he knew something bad was going to happen. The factory got built. It was a furniture factory, and he had the factory all good to go. He had his house about a mile away from the factory, and one evening he and his wife were getting ready to go to bed, and all of a sudden the house and at the exact same time the factory caught on fire, at the same time, even a mile apart. And it was his wife who really bore the brunt of the experience, because they ran out of the house. They managed to escape with their lives and nothing else. They were singed. And his wife continued to rant and rave for another few weeks later. She was actually ended up being tied to a bed. They said she was literally...
Go on.
No, she was not Barb from Stranger Things. No. She literally ended up being tied to the bed because she was ranting and raving about fire men. She said she saw these First Nations men who were leaping and jumping through the flames, running their hands along the curtains and the walls, making the fire burn faster.
Jeez.
And she died a few weeks later. She was one of the few people to ever have written on her death certificate, died of fright. Jacob kind of went, that didn't work out so hot. And he headed back, back east. And then the land sat for 30 years. Nobody wanted it. Surprise.
I'm shocked.
So it took about 30 years for anyone to be interested in that land. And eventually a man named William Pendray came forward. He was going to set up his own factory. And while Mr. Pendray was not that concerned with ancient Aboriginal curses, he was certainly concerned about fire.
Well, and, a white industrialist who doesn't give a tit about the indigenous.
Isn't that weird?
I know. We've never heard that story before.
This story is so unique.
Man.
So what he did was he set up a rather rudimentary fire suppression system, and it was mostly a big valve that would open up, and then water would shoot out of big cast iron pipes overhead.
I thought he'd just pay, like, children in rags to shout, "It's on fire, Governor! It's on fire, Governor!" And they just use the children to smother the blaze.
Pretty much. Dip them in the ocean and throw them on the flames. Right. So,
go ahead.
So Mr. Pendray decided he was going to do this. So he was going to put in this fire suppression system. And the factory was done. He was excited. He was going to go inspect it. And he's walking through his brand new, beautiful factory when one of the pipes overhead broke loose and somehow managed to hit him squarely in the head, killing him.
Yikes.
Yeah, not good. He had a son named Ernest. Ernest suddenly found himself in a management position. And Ernest, being like a lot of 20-year-old guys, likes fast cars, in this case, fast carriages. And he had a pretty souped-up carriage. It had steel around the rims of the wheels to cut through the mud quicker, because he's cool. And
Did they spin, for God's sakes?
And the carriage bounced up and down.
Of course.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Can't wait for someone to invent rap music.
Yes.
So I can look really fly.
Bitches love this. So he ends up racing towards the factory one day to get to work, and for some unknown reason, the horse shies, it stops, he is thrown out of the carriage, and then the horse takes off, and the wheel of our friend's carriage rolled right over his neck, separating his head from his body, or his body from his head, depending on which side of the road you were on, I suppose.
That's a really whimsical way to look at a beheading.
Isn't it? I'm a pretty whimsical guy. So, yeah, he ends up dying, and
no,
things aren't good.
The beheaded man died,
and
he expired later that day in hospital.
But you know what, the lucky thing is they had one more son who I'm not sure was super anxious to join the family business at this point, but he was walking to work. Legend had it that his mother had made him promise never to ride a horse to work. He was walking to work, he got to the gates of the factory, and he found a 22 caliber shotgun leaning against the gate, which he thought was strange. He thought he'd move it, no one would get hurt. And I don't know, have you handled a shotgun? Do you know?
I have, yeah.
Okay, so you'll know how hard this was to do. He grabbed the gun and he was able to shoot himself in the chest.
What?
Yes, which is so weird. So he shot himself in the chest. He did not die, but I believe...
But open carry is totally cool.
But I believe his factory running days were limited.
I bet he wished he'd died.
Yeah, probably in those days, 1908.
Oh, man, I don't know how... Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did he try and pick it up with his mouth?
I don't know.
Hey, watch this.
I'll hold my beer. So now, so the factory, of course, is long gone, but the house the Pendrys built was actually quite close to the factory, and it's still standing in the Victoria Inner Harbor. It's known now as the Gatsby Mansion. It's part of the Huntington Manor Hotel, and it's quite well known for being haunted, and there is a bit of a wait list. If you want the master bedroom suite, I believe it's room number 4, in the Gatsby Mansion on Halloween, you have to join a line, get on a wait list, whatever.
Really?
Yeah, because the heads of William and Ernest are said to come out and kind of spin around the room, and people generally flee, and then the hotel knows that, okay, they stayed in room number 4, they get free breakfast, because free breakfast fixes everything.
Well, I do agree that free breakfast fixes everything. I mean, I could be drafted into an African jungle army by machete-bearing men in jeeps.
Because they'd be looking for someone like you.
Well, I am very stout. And in the morning is...
This is the smell of a warm 3-day-old egg salad sandwich in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech. And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag with new Fabuloso lemon scent.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Smell the difference? When life gives you stinky, get Hefty Ultra Strong with new Fabuloso lemon scent. It smells like clean, freshly picked lemons. So no matter what's inside your trash, you can stop the stink and smell the lemon.
As long as Mobutu gave me free breakfast, I'd think, yeah, no, this is okay. This is fine.
That's good.
My concern, though, is this, and this is an issue I have.
Mm-hmm.
So they wait in line to stay in the haunted room on Halloween.
Right.
And then they leave because it's scary. No, now, as far as I'm concerned, the clerk should say, go pick up that shotgun with your mouth.
And pass the test.
What did you expect,
I know,
you idiots?
I know. I guess maybe it's more the people who don't expect it.
Right.
Which, yeah, I don't know. People are weird. I don't know if you know that, but...
No, this is all new to me.
So this,
recent circumstances have not conspired to show me that people are weird.
So the hotel is quite well known for this. Where the factory used to be is now, it's called the Laurel Point Inn. It's quite nice.
Oh, yeah? That explains a few things.
Yes, it does. I've been in there, and what they've reported is shadows in the rooms, wine glasses coming off tables, that sort of thing. The maids apparently are not required to clean a room on their own. They can work in pairs because it is not the guests that they're worried about. It's the spirits that are there.
Interesting.
And it's believed that they are the spirits of First Nations people who have lost their burial place.
Right.
Apparently, they're not quite as aggressive as they once were. They're not burning anything down.
Well, that's a bonus.
Yeah. But I've been in that hotel, and I remember being in there thinking, why? You know, it's so dark in here. It's so, but it wasn't like all the lights were on, but it was just kind of this weird darkness to it. And if you walk down the hall of the rooms as you go past the restaurants, it just seems to get creepier and creepier the further you go.
And for those of you who don't know, the Laurel Point Inn is a very, very, I won't say exclusive, but very expensive hotel here in Victoria.
Yeah.
Made of glass and steel right on a point.
It's supposed to look like a cruise ship. That's how it's designed.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So theoretically, it should be a very bright and airy space.
Absolutely.
But Ian's very right. There is something that just takes the joy out of the space. It's not a happy place to be.
No, not at all. You get a sense of being uncomfortable. You get a sense of something that's not quite right.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So next, I'm really curious about the story in here about the haunted hotel.
Well, there's a few haunted hotels in Victoria. Which one?
The one where the caretaker killed his kids.
You mean The Shining? Also. By Stephen King.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Yeah, no, I was just testing you. I wanted to make sure you'd read the book.
Yeah.
Because I have.
Definitely.
Hang on here. The Bedford Regency Hotel, of course.
Right. Yes. Yeah,
the one with Charlotte the Hooker.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I love that because Iron Maiden has a song called Charlotte the Harlot.
Great.
And that's pretty sweet.
Well,
if we could afford music rights, I'd play that for you here.
And I would certainly enjoy hearing it. The Bedford Regency, I love this story. That building actually started out as a two-story building, and it was for a newspaper office. And the man who owned it decided he wanted to expand it, and he added about four more floors. And he was going to turn it into an office building, but the offices, the spaces kind of all dried up in Victoria in 1917. And so he turned it into a hotel, and it quickly became a rather famous hotel for being the place where you wanted to have someone killed or purchase drugs. This would be a great place to start.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Yes, it does. And it was known as the Churchill. And it over the years, it just slowly got worse and worse and worse. And it went down into kind of pretty low around the 60s, 70s. And that's the time when this story takes place. There was a woman there named Charlotte. She was also known as Lady Churchill. And she would entertain gentlemen for money in her room on a pretty regular basis. And there was the other thing about her was she always wore this incredibly strong floral perfume. You could always smell when Charlotte was heading your way because the smell of the perfume would choke a horse.
See, I have that, but not with perfume.
You definitely have a pungent aroma, yes. Like a llama or a goat.
Bad man.
That's a terrible joke. So Charlotte was, quite well known, obviously, and very friendly. She would often go downstairs. There was a beer parlor in the basement. It was nicknamed the Bucket of Blood. Kind of place you take mom for Mother's Day, I guess. And
actually, my mother wouldn't go there.
Your mom probably works there.
Probably owns a place.
And Charlotte would go down there every day around 4 or 5 o'clock. She'd have a pint of beer, rustle up some business, whatever she was going to do. And then, get on with what she was doing. And one day a man walked in. His name was Brady. He was not known as an attractive man. He worked in radio. Apparently he had a face for radio. And
my mother said the same thing to me.
Your mom, I'd like to meet her, I think.
I think you two would get along. That's why you must never meet.
So Brady was quite famous for, he would always buy a cigar up on Government Street at the cigar shop. And he would walk down the street puffing on the cigar and going down into the pub. And again, you always knew when Brady was going to show up because you could smell the cigar smoke. So somehow Charlotte and Brady meet. They hit it off. He becomes a favorite client. He becomes a heavily discounted client. And by some miracle of God's design, these two end up getting engaged.
How did he get that discount? Just asking for a friend.
Charm, maybe?
Oh, never mind.
No, you're good. So Brady and Charlotte end up getting engaged, and this is kind of a miracle that no one ever thought these two would ever marry anyone, let alone each other. There's a lot of talk of going to Vancouver. We're going to start over. We're going to start this new life. But there were some people who were not as thrilled that Brady was taking Charlotte away. You know, some people thought of her more as communal property, I guess. And so Brady never saw it coming. He came to the bar. He was going down the stairs from Government Street to go into the bar. And one of the patrons, who said later at the trial, because you know this is not going to end well, he said, I was only trying to scare him.
And what
it never works.
Nope.
So what he ended up doing was he hit a beer bottle on the side of the bar and he lunged at Brady's throat and he caught him right in the carotid artery.
I was only trying to scare him.
Yeah.
By murdering him so that in the next life.
By slashing his throat.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So Brady turns, he tries to get up the stairs to get some help, but of course blood is spraying everywhere. And the newspaper at the time published a delightful quote when they said, "We all knew Brady was dead when the cigar he kept constantly chomped in his mouth rolled down the stairs and extinguished itself in a pool of his own blood." It's a Christmas card, really.
You think maybe they'd know he's dead when a doctor pronounced him dead? That poor son of a bitch is lying there. No, I just need a doctor. He's gone. The cigar's out.
Cigar's
out. Throw him in the dumpster. You son of a bitch. I think he's saying, take my cigarettes.
And my wallet. Yeah, and can have Charlotte too.
That was his dying wish.
So poor Brady is gone and he's dead. And Charlotte comes downstairs, discovers that not only her fiance, but really her savior is now deceased. She quietly goes back upstairs and unbeknownst to most people, Charlotte had a pretty serious heroin habit. And within a couple of weeks, she's gone as well. So the hotel just sort of kept grinding down into nothingness to the point where even they couldn't function anymore. And it was closed. It was renovated, reopened as the Bedford Regency. Ironically and somewhat cruelly, they turned Charlotte's old bedroom into the honeymoon suite, which seems wrong. And people began complaining pretty quickly. One of the big complaints was that people would go into the room and they would smell an overwhelming smell of flowers. They would call down and complain. The other thing that happens, and this is actually something we had confirmed on our ghost tour, was that people would go into the bathroom or they'd be approaching the room and they would hear a woman singing inside the room. And last summer, two of the guides were doing the tour and the one guide was sort of standing off to the side. And these two women, a mother and a daughter, approached the guide standing off to the side and said, excuse me, is there a story about our hotel? And she said, several.
Let's go upstairs, I'll tell you.
What are you listening, or what's your problem? And they said, well, we're staying in the room second from the end. And Charlotte's room is, of course, at the end. And they said, we have been there for two nights, and we keep calling down to the front desk to complain that a woman is singing her fool head off in the room beside us, and the hotel keeps saying, we're sorry, there's no one staying in that room. So that was nice for us because it gave us some confirmation of the stories that we tell.
Yeah, no kidding.
And as far as our friend Brady goes, when they renovated the hotel, they decided not to put in another a pub in the basement. They decided to turn that into a space for the staff to have coffee breaks, that kind of thing. And one day a gentleman approached at the front desk and said, excuse me, I'm just wondering, can I see downstairs? I used to work down there when it was a pub. And one of the chambermaids was going past and she's like, yeah, no problem. Like, come with me. We're going to have a coffee. And they took him down there. So they went down there. And of course, the doors that were traditionally the doors to the pub had been chained off and closed off years ago. They're all sitting down talking. He's telling them a bit about the good old days of the old Churchill when the smell of cigar smoke gets super strong. And everyone's like, what's going on? Because, of course, no one smoked down there for 30 years. And that's when a full-bodied apparition of a man comes walking down the steps. And he was so real looking. One of the maids stood up and said, excuse me, sir, this isn't a public place. Like, what are you doing down here? He got to the bottom of the stairs and he disappeared. And everyone was like, wow, that was amazing. But the poor bartender was the one sitting there very pale faced saying,
right,
I know who that was because was working here the day he was murdered. And so maybe his presence was what triggered Grady to come back. But when I was writing the book, the biggest lesson I learned was you want to talk to two kinds of people in particular. You want to talk to the night janitors and you want to talk to the security guards because
so true.
They're the ones who are there after hours. And I did get to talk to a man named Andrew, who is the night janitor there. And I asked him for some stories, and he told me some amazing ones. But my favorite one, and this shows how cool, calm, and collected Andrew is, he was cleaning the men's bathroom in the basement around 3 o'clock in the morning. He had the door locked just so he could clean in peace. The place was closed. And as he's cleaning one of the stalls, he hears a noise, and he happens to look over at the sink, and the hot and cold taps are now running full force. No one's touched them. They've just come on by themselves. And I said to him, well, what did you do? And he goes, I went and cleaned somewhere else for a while, which would have been so gone.
Same here.
As the cowardly lion that I truly am. So it was cool. He told me a lot of great stories. There are, you know, I piled them into the book, and it's a fascinating building. Really, really good. Now there is, ironically, a bar called the Churchill in the hotel.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I wondered why they called it the Churchill.
That's why.
I thought it was just part of Victoria's stupid obsession with all things English.
Nope. It was actually an homage to the old name of the hotel.
So. Oh, okay.
And it's a great pub. It's got a ton of beer on tap, and it's just a nice place to hang out.
I think they share a kitchen with the Garrick's Head, which is on the end of the block.
They do. It's the Garrick's Head is actually attached to the hotel. They're all now one big
right
building, but yeah, yeah
they
yeah.
have incredible french fries.
Excellent.
The Garrick's Head makes incredible french fries.
That surprises me, you know that much about french fries.
I know. Well, with my lean runner's physique, you wouldn't know that I enjoy such sumptuous treats.
You would not know at all. No.
And certainly I'm not munching while you're talking. I'm not munching on jelly beans over here.
Loudly.
Loudly. Yes, yeah. Well,
no, you're
being... as it turns out, you cannot eat jelly beans quietly.
No.
Anne Frank, not eating jelly beans in the walls.
That would have been bad.
That would have been
maybe
bad.
That's what happened.
I've seen Inglourious Bastards. I know how it works. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we come back. We're going to have more stories from Ian, and hopefully no off-color jokes about the Holocaust. We'll be one step above the White House press room. All right, we're right back. Welcome back to the Ghost Story Guys. We are still talking about Ian's book, Victoria's Most Haunted.
Which kind
is,
of you.
Yes. Available in stores April 25th on mm-hmm. Tuesday. It'll be out.
Yep.
And Ian is just about to tell us another story. This one, tell me the one about the, it was a little girl drowned and there's a videotape.
What?
And then she kills you in 7 days if you watch
it. It's The Ring. The movie The Ring. Oh. That has nothing to do with my book.
Well, it's not about a drowned kid.
Okay. And well, no, there is one about a drowned kid. There is a hotel chain here in town that is now defunct. And for a while, they were trying to open up some boutique hotels. And as a result of this, they purchased a home out on the Sanche Peninsula, right on the beach, quite a large home. And they were using it as a kind of a B&B sort of place. My wife had decided she won a night or something. And so she was going to have the night there. And then I was going to go the second night. And I got there and I said, hey, how is it? Like, this house is beautiful. It's a beautiful place. And she's like, I didn't sleep very well. It was I felt weird here. And I was like, oh, and I went in the front door and then off to the left. Was a hallway with doors at an angle, and those were the bedrooms. And at the end was a door, a big wooden door at the very end. And then if you went to the right, you went, there was a giant kitchen and a living room and a dining room, and then just a wall of glass overlooking the ocean. It was stunning. It was the largest room I think I've ever been in a private home. And I was walking around a bit, and I noticed that I went towards the kitchen and that I didn't feel so bad, but the further down the hall I got to this wooden door, I felt more and more uncomfortable. And eventually I got to the end of the hall. I opened the door and there was a swimming pool and indoor pool. And I went in and I started walking a little bit around the pool, and it was incredible. It was just the saddest feeling. It was just indescribably sad and lonely. And I felt terrible. And I came out of there and I walked up to the room and I went in and I said, have you gone swimming? And she said, well, I went in the pool and I just got right back out again. I'm just not happy there at all. And I said, yeah, like, it's just really sad. And that night, as we were trying to get to sleep, I didn't sleep well at all because it just felt like something was trying to get your attention. So the next morning, there was a woman there, and this woman pretty much ran the joint. She was the cleaner, the cook, the receptionist, everything. She did everything. And it was her job to kind of make the guests happy. And so we were sitting at the counter where she was making breakfast, and there was another couple off in the living room, another couple off outside. And I really wanted to know maybe she didn't feel anything, but I wanted to know. So I began that sort of delicate dance one does when one wants to know something, but doesn't want to appear like a crazy person.
Is it in yet?
Oh my God, you're a pig. So I was trying to figure out how to ask her this without coming off like I'm insane. So I was talking to her a little bit about the house and what her job was there, and she was describing all that. And I said, do you ever feel kind of a little bit creepy here? And she looks around and she goes, why do you think I live in the garage? And there was an apartment in the garage where she stayed. And I said, do you know the history of the house at all? Do you know what was going on? And she said, yeah, actually it was built by a German industrialist, and he had three sons, and they were living in the house. And then the one of the sons, apparently the youngest one, drowned in the pool, which is awful. And the family was
so... Glad you pointed that out.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah. So this poor boy died, and the family apparently couldn't handle it. They sold the house immediately, went back to Germany. But it just seems to me that boy just got left behind. Like, he's still there. Something is still there. He feels abandoned. And it was one of the most profound feelings. And I think maybe because it was a child, there was no kind of subterfuge or trying to hide what was happening. This kid was in pain. And I didn't get to go back again. The hotel chain folded. The house got sold. I don't know what the history is now, but it was a pretty profound experience to have just in a hotel.
So do you think that was a conscious haunting? That wasn't residual energy?
I think that was definitely a conscious thing. And I think the reason it was so hard to get to sleep that night was because he was looking for someone, like looking, I guess, for his family, but looking for someone to pay attention to him. I mean,
right.
It's hard to describe. I didn't see anything. I don't see things.
Right.
I often don't hear things, but I just sort of pick things up. And for this kid, that was really what was coming through. Was he was just desperately lonely and didn't understand where his family had gone.
Oh man,
yeah.
that's awful.
No, I know. Big surprise, the hotel folded.
Yeah, no kidding.
No one wants to hang out with the ghost of a dead crying kid. I don't even like live crying kids. I don't know why I'd like a dead one. Oh, that wasn't very nice.
No, that was terrible.
I'm turning into you.
God forbid. One is bad enough. So, I mean, you've obviously got a history of this, and I guess that makes being like sensitive to these things, which I guess makes sense. That's why you joined that group. You guys had the firehouse. Oh, shit. What was it?
The Ghostbusters.
That's...
You total tool.
Right. Sorry. You helped someone with a ghost.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You weren't the new black guy on the team. Who joined just as a Stay Puft Marshmallow. Okay. No, tell the story, please.
Okay. No, so a bit of a caveat to this. If you're having a ghost problem, don't call me. Don't call me. I am
and
not.
And someone did.
And someone, yes.
That was
upsetting.
That was rough.
No, I'm not the guy to call to help you with your ghost problem. I am happy to refer you to some very nice people who are in town here.
Send me nudes first. and I will psychically intuit whether or not we can help you.
You're such a pig. So, no, but I don't, I mean, I've helped my friends. I'm not the guy to call to get a ghost out of your house. I'm like the guy, if you want to like get along with the ghosts, then I'm the guy to call, because I'm often pretty good at being able to figure out what's happening or who's there or what the situation is. I'm never going to come over with like incense and candles and holy water and banish anything from your home. That's just not going to be a service I will provide.
Always a bridesmaid. Never a bride.
But if you want to know kind of what's going on, I am more than happy to help out. So this friend had mentioned that she'd had some weird experiences in her rented apartment. This is a house up on Fort Street. And she'd said that she'd heard her name being called. She had been woken up in the night, a couple times the toilet had flushed on its own, things like that. And she knew something was going on. One night she had three candles lit on her coffee table, and she noticed the middle one was flickering. The other two weren't. And this was not a forced air home. This was like a radiator heat home. There's no fans on, nothing like that. No windows open. And she said to the candles out loud, she goes, "Are you doing that? If you're doing that, stop it." And the candle immediately stopped flickering in the middle. And then she stopped and she looked and she waited. And then she went, "Okay, you can do it again." And the middle candle began flickering.
Holy man.
Yeah, no, she's pretty brave. So she talked to me about this when she found out I was kind of into ghosty stuff. And that's the technical term, by the way.
Yeah, I like that. Yes. Yeah. I remember seeing that in the dictionary.
Yeah. And she said, "Would you come in and check out what's going on?" And I said, I gave her my thing about being a coward.
Glad you finished that
and
sentence.
Said, yeah, and I said, I'm happy to do that, but just so you know, I'm not a fixer. I'm just an interpreter. So went over and sat down. And for me, it was weird because I had worn a cap all day. I had a cap on, which I don't usually do.
Did Egon come?
Shut up. And I sat down in the living room and I just sat there and I kind of just relaxed and kind of let myself be a little more open to what was going on. And immediately I took my hat off. I said, "Oh no, that's no good." Oh. And my friend said, "Oh, I don't care. Like, whatever." And I said, "Not you." And what I got was, and again, I don't see things, but I got this image of a soldier. Mm-hmm. And he was standing in the kitchen. He was watching us. And I described him to my friend and said, "Yeah, like he's standing there and I can see him. He's got his hands behind his back." And she goes, "You mean at ease?" I went, "Oh, that's, yeah, I guess that's what it is. I didn't put that together, but yeah, that's exactly what it was." And I didn't know World War I, World War II. I could describe his uniform. Afterwards, we went on Google and we Googled uniforms and it was World War I.
Oh, okay.
Which was cool. And I just sort of tried to be open to what he wanted known. And I get pictures in my head. It's really weird. And I was able to tell her that he likes her. He thinks she's a good person. Mm-hmm. He likes her being there. It was a bit like he was protecting her from something else in the house, and that he approved of her. He liked her presence being there. At some point she had said to him, I asked her, if you feel safe enough, have you asked him what his name is? And she said, "No, I haven't. I'll give it a try." So for three nights, she said, What's your name? One night, she turned out the light, she lay back, and she said, "What's your name?" And she said, it was like green came up behind her eyes, and it said, "My," and then it faded, "name," faded, "is," faded, and then it went C-H-R. I, and she said, "Christopher," and the letters faded and the word "yes" came up. That's amazing. So she knew his name was Christopher. And while I was there, we sort of hung out with him and got a feel for him. And then he wandered away. I had to go to the ghost bathroom. I don't know. And we talked a bit about that. And that was cool. And she was really happy that that had happened. She knew more about him. She did some research on the house. Turned out it had been a convalescent home in World War I and World War II, like a military hospital.
Right.
So guys would get injured. They'd be brought back to Victoria Harbor, Squamish Harbor. And then they would spend time in this house until they were well enough to go home. They'd be shipped home. And Christopher was pretty clear. Christopher had, he had died unexpectedly. He didn't expect to die. They didn't expect him to die. And he was, while he was at the home, and he was dead and he was gone, and he knew this, but he didn't have anywhere else to go. This is kind of where he felt safe. And after that happened, I would check in with her periodically. And one day she said, oh, something really weird happened. And I said, oh, what's that? And she said, I went in the kitchen. And she had a very old, like, 1940s stove. It was an effort to turn this sucker on. And there was a copper kettle on one of the burners. And she came in the kitchen, and every single burner was on red hot, except for the one with the kettle.
Oh.
And, yeah, and we were, like, standing in the hallway at work. And I said, that's really odd. Like, and what I was getting from this was, it's some kind of warning. And I said, have you done something? Have you changed something? Have you altered something? She said, no, no, but she looked a little shifty.
She said, I've started smoking crack.
Yeah, that's right. I'm molesting guinea pigs in the basement. So she looked a little like kind of unsettled. And but she said, no, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. She went away. We checked in a little while later. She told me she had a new boyfriend and that Christopher wasn't around as much. When he was there, when the boyfriend was there, Christopher wasn't. And then one day, the stove, none of the burners got turned on except the one with the kettle, and it was on red hot.
Oh.
And I said, seriously, did nothing change? Well, as the story came out, it was the fact that the day after when the stove lit up was the first night the boyfriend had stayed over.
Oh, okay.
I was like, okay. Because I think Christopher felt kind of protective, like kind of he sort
right.
of was in charge of maintaining her virtue.
So I'll burn your house down? Well, that sounds fair.
I'm sure you've done that to an ex-girlfriend.
Only because I love them so much.
And they just don't understand.
No, no one ever does.
So in the end, they moved from that home. Some things still happened, but nothing quite like what had happened before.
Interesting.
So once the boyfriend came in, Christopher backed off. It was pretty interesting. So she's now moved to a new home, and so far pretty ghost free. There does seem to be something in the house. I've been out there, and I'm pretty sure originally it was Aboriginal land because it's quite a ways out of town.
Right.
And that was my impression, was that it was some Aboriginal people who were coming and checking it out. But she's happy. So far, so good. So that's a good thing.
So I'm going to ask you this, and this is a question a lot of people asked me when I was interviewing for my book, and I quickly grew tired of it, and I'm sure you will too. Why do you think Victoria is so haunted? Now, I know we've talked in past a little bit about, you know, certain like chemical or the rock geological makeup of the place.
And surrounded by like salt, trapped energy, ley lines.
Right.
Ley lines are a huge thing, more in England than they are here. A lot of the big burial mounds and henges are all built very strategically on ley lines. The cathedrals, great cathedrals,
right,
built on ley lines. Victoria is at a ley line intersection. I think we have about 8 that run through here.
Really?
Yeah. So that's quite unusual. And coastal, there's something, and this is my own personal theory. I don't know if it's true. My own personal theory has been that the coastal places seem to attract more energy, and specifically the west coasts.
Right.
The west coast of England, the west coast of Ireland, the west coast of Canada seems to be much more spiritually vibrant than other places in the country. I don't know why. It is interesting. I think, Victoria, the combination of the history of the First Nations people, as well as the ragtag out-of-control Europeans who first came here, and then the geological stuff with being surrounded by salt water traps energy. And the beliefs of the First Nations people who believed that their ancestors did not go. They remained. They were part of life. You've got 10,000 years of dead First Nations people.
Right.
Their spirits hanging around thinking they belong here.
Watching us pee.
And maybe they do, right? Like, that's the thing. So it's interesting. I don't know why. I know I felt it when I moved here, and I was quite comfortable with it. The only place I'm not comfortable with it in Victoria, James Bay.
And, you know, I of course, live in James Bay.
Yes,
and,
you do.
Oh, man. I have really noticed there is a period of about 2 weeks where at night, James Bay was so dark. And, I mean, obviously it's nighttime. It's going to be dark. And so any of you yahoos who want
to— lack of light.
Yeah, yeah. Any of you ding-dongs want to write in and tell me how nighttime is dark. Just, you know this. I understand that. But it's darker than the rest of town.
Right.
One night I went for a walk. This is about a week ago now. Went for a walk. It was, I want to say, about 10:30. It wasn't late. And I walked up Menzies Street as far as Simcoe, the Thrifties. And as soon as I crossed Simcoe, going down towards the water, it just got oppressive.
Yeah.
The best way I can describe it is oppressive. There was a quality to the air.
Yeah.
A quality to the night.
Yeah.
It lasted, and there was, I saw a handful of people, so it wasn't like the streets were deserted.
Yeah.
But there was just something that made me very uncomfortable.
I once did a walk, walked up to Thrifty's, and then began heading towards the park, so crossed over. And then began heading towards Beacon Hill.
Right.
And the minute I crossed that street off the Thrifty's property onto the other side, I literally felt like I was being followed.
Yeah.
Or watched or followed, something. For about three or four blocks until I got out of kind of the heart of James Bay. So I don't know what it is. There is absolutely something going on there. The Edelweiss Club is there that...
oh, of course.
There's been a few investigations on. It's very haunted. And...
Now, that's also shadow people in the Edelweiss Club, as I recall.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When I went on that walk the other night, but once I got down to Dallas, it was fine. But then as soon as I got over to Oswego and started walking up Oswego, it was so quiet.
Yeah.
So eerily quiet. I almost called someone just so I'd have company. And I mean, wow. I've...
You're used to being on... You drive around it all the time at night.
All the time. Yeah. I've driven the Silk Road at night by myself. Yeah. I mean, Christ, I took pictures in the City of Industry, California at 1 a.m. by myself.
That's right.
But for whatever reason, on this stretch of road, I just felt so exposed.
Wow.
And alone.
That's wild.
I could hear traffic, but it was diffuse. Like it was a million miles away.
Right.
And as soon as I got near Simcoe, people.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, there's a few people around and I felt fine.
Yeah.
But it was something about that stretch between Simcoe and Dallas that was just, I don't know, deeply uncomfortable. So yeah, James Bay is a very, very... Very, very intense place to be.
Very unsettled, and I don't know what that is, but yeah.
No. And I will say, the only two people who've ever challenged me to fist fights have been in James Bay.
It surprises me you don't get challenged more for people wanting to punch you.
I pick on people smaller than me. That's the key, you understand. All right, so that's going to do it. I think we're going to stop it there. We don't want to give away all the good stuff.
No way. You got to buy the book.
That's right. Buy five copies.
Give them to friends.
Give it to the people you love and especially the people you hate.
Especially at nighttime.
That's right. So Victoria's Most Haunted, where can people find it, Ian?
It's going to be in town here. It's going to be in Boland's, Monroe's, Chapters, any great bookstore in town like that.
Boland's and Monroe's wouldn't take my book, so isn't that nice for you?
Huh. Well, they do have standards. But it's also going to be available online pretty much anywhere. It's going to be all over. So yeah, no, it's out there. I believe it's going to be sold on the ferries, which I love.
That is so cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. So that's fun. That's a definite part of Vancouver Island is going on the ferries.
Absolutely. And you've got a signing event coming up.
I do on May 9th at Boland Books, 7:00. I will be there reading some stories and signing some books, so come on down.
And I will be there fleeing sudden death at the hands of Ian's publicist.
Yeah, no, Tori will not kill anyone on the event.
She'll kill me
afterwards. I'll only make the disclaimer. I can assure you she will not kill anyone at the event.
Afterwards, all bets are off.
Well, yeah, she can be fierce.
All right, so we're going to be back in 2 weeks. Want to thank Peter at Pizzanta Music for our great intro.
Definitely.
Want to thank Will Forbes Music again for his fantastic bumper music. Thank you, Will. Check both those guys out on SoundCloud.
Yep.
Rate and review us on iTunes.
Please.
You know, it helps get more eyes on the place, bumps our numbers.
And if you like the post and you like the podcast, share it on your own Facebook page.
Absolutely. Yeah, share it on if you're too cool for Facebook, which I understand. Share it on whatever social media platform you happen to like. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Ghost Story Guys.
Yep.
Again, Ian's book is available everywhere fine books are sold. My own book, A Strange Little Place. The Hauntings and Unexplained Events of
I have a
town.
Copy you can buy. I'll give it to you.
No resell. It's available on Amazon and everywhere else fine books are sold. Mm-hmm. Until next time, take care, be good to one another, and
go buy a book.
Wait, what? Do you hear that? I think. Uh-oh. No, she's coming in. I'm not going to live to see her signing. Oh, shit.
Oh, goodbye.
Well, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storr. I know, it's very loud, isn't it?
It's super loud. Sorry. It freaked me out.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll do the intro again, won't I, you bastard? I did wonder why it was so loud.
It was super loud.
Okay.
Frighteningly loud. Probably wet myself.
That's just old age catch.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Third time's the charm?